You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
So hello there, welcome back to the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. And wherever you're listening, I hope you're well and staying positive during these uncertain and difficult times for us all at the moment. And I guess that's why we do the Looseheads podcast, to try and keep people positive by having in-depth chats with some of the global stars of the game we all love, but also tying that into the mantra of Looseheads, the Looseheads goal, which is, of course, tackling the stigma and raising awareness for mental health. And I know I always say this at the start of the podcast, and I might be repeating myself quite a bit, but getting guests on the podcast, and especially the guests that we've got on today's podcast, wouldn't be possible without the work of Rob, Mark and Dave, who, of course, join me over the magical world of Zoom for another podcast. So, guys, how much are we looking forward to this podcast today?
Yeah, dead excited for this one.
Yeah, so on the podcast last week, we had Jamie Batty, the Scotland international. Really good to chat to him. Some powerful messages in there, mixed in with some brilliant stories about going on tour with Scotland and playing against Australia. So definitely worth listening to that if you get the chance. But now it's time to introduce our next guest to the podcast. And we're delighted to say WASC and New Zealand star Lima Sopoanga joins us on the Looseheads podcast this afternoon. So Lima, welcome to the podcast. Hope you're doing well, and I hope you've warmed up from last week playing against Bath. Lots of cold one.
Yeah, hey boys, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. I think I've only just thawed out after playing down there at the Rec. To be fair, I was bloody freezing, standing at the back, twiddling my thumbs. You know, it's tough out there. You know, the forwards have all the fun and smash each other up, and I'm sitting out the back just catching a cold. So
you look bloody cold in that photo on Twitter.
honestly, in that photo, I put my jersey over my ears, and at that moment, I thought, like, far, there's 20 minutes to go. I think I might just walk off the pitch right now and just sub myself off. Like, I've had enough for today. Like, that's enough. I don't need to be out here any longer.
What a game, though.
Yeah, it was really good, eh? It was awesome to be able to throw the ball around and score some tries. And, you know, it probably didn't look good for us in the first 10 or 15 minutes. You know, we're down 13-0 and probably staring down the barrel of a good old-fashioned hiding. But, you know, fair play to the boys. We stuck at it, and we put on a performance for the fans, and hopefully people at home enjoyed it. And I certainly enjoyed sort of offensively and defensively, you know, 96 points in a prem game in the middle of winter at the Rec. You got to be happy with that.
Yeah, and I love sort of some of the tweets you do post-match as well, Lima. And one thing that Rob touched on yesterday when we were planning the podcast, he said that you kind of tweet about that post-match buzz. And we were quite intrigued to know what that feels like for a player, especially on a Friday night game. And I mean, you tweet saying, is anyone in New Zealand up to have a chat with you? But I guess that adrenaline is still pumping well into the early hours of the morning.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm used to nighttime games. You know, I come from the south where a lot of our games are at night. So most of the time I'm wide awake till like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'm just like sitting there thinking like, oh man, you know, my wife's asleep and she's just like, go to sleep. And I'm just sitting there twiddling my thumbs like, oh, let's see who's awake. Let's see who can talk, you know, talk some rubbish to online. And it's kind of a cool release to sort of do after a night game, interact with fans and have a bit of a laugh with some people around the world.
Well, I guess you're not going to be talking rubbish that much at the moment, Lima, because of the way WASC have started this season. I think I'm right in saying 5 wins on the bounce now for you guys. 3 of those, obviously, against Sale, Bath and Exeter, of course, 3 of the teams that you were challenging for the title with last season. So confidence looks like it must be high within the team, and you look like you're playing with confidence yourself.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. I think that comes a lot down to sort of the environment that the coaches have built and sort of instilled, and then it filters down to the leaders in our team, and then everyone just buys in. And I think what you're seeing, you know, at the start of the season, it was probably a case of maybe the boys were still a bit worn out. You know, we only had sort of 2 days preseason and straight into it, and we won our first game or whatever. Then we dropped our next two. And we just needed a little bit of time. And I think with this tournament being such a marathon, I had full confidence that we were always going to turn it around and sort of come right. And there's a long way to go and a lot of water to go under the bridge. But I think we are definitely starting to see some of our class and sort of our just what we can do coming to fruition now. So I don't even think we've scratched the surface yet, but I think there's so much, plenty of good stuff to come.
Yeah, absolutely, Liam. Before we press record, we talked a little bit about the Premiership and European rugby, obviously having the break over the next 2 weeks. And of course, there's positives and negatives to that. But what do you think about it? Are you happy with the rest?
Yeah, I think, on a bit of a run of wins like we are right now, I think we would have loved to have just continued the momentum and tried to continue our good form. But also, on the flip side, it also allows guys who have maybe picked up a few niggles or who are currently in the injured squad more time to come back and not have pressure of getting back for games. So, I think maybe Malachi's due to come back against Quinns now. And, I think that's such a massive boost for our club and our team. And then there's a few other guys who maybe picked up a few niggles over the last couple of weeks who get to rest their bodies and rest their minds and just come back recharged. And I think that's really important as well. And, for someone like myself, who at the moment I've been lucky enough to play a few big minutes, I think the break came at a great time for me and just gives myself some time to refresh, mentally and physically, and then smash into the next, block of games and see how we go.
We'll get a bit more on Wasps later on in the podcast, because as you say there, you're playing some great stuff at the moment and you're absolutely full of confidence as a player yourself. But it's interesting that you say that the break has come at a good time for you to refresh and reset physically and mentally, because it's something you touched on before the Bath game and in quite a lovely interview and a candid interview really with the Daily Telegraph ahead of the Friday night game, where you sort of discussed sort of the challenge that you faced over the last couple of years since moving to the UK, Liam. And I just wanted to see if you wanted to touch on that interview a little bit more, because it was quite revealing that people may not have known that you struggled with the transition when you came over here, but you've been able to use the breaks recently to just reset the mind, get everything into perspective and just enjoy rugby again.
Yeah, so it's been coming out as my third season now, and I guess my first two haven't gone as I would have liked it to have gone, and that's probably for a number of reasons, but I look back at it now and I think that these things are sort of put in your life to help make you grow as a person and help make you grow as a player. And while it's not always fun during that time to sort of go through a bit of heartache and, a bit of pain, it definitely makes you a stronger person. And I truly believe that there's nothing given to you that you can't handle. And I think, I just think maybe I was a bit naive coming over here, thinking that rugby in New Zealand and rugby in an English-speaking country like England would be exactly the same thing. And that was probably a little bit of my undoing. But when I got here, it was such a big difference in terms of the way the game is played. And at the time, Wasps were probably in a weird situation. We weren't firing from the top down. It wasn't just me personally. I think there was a whole bunch of things that was happening at the club, and I just seemed to come at a time where I guess the club was in a bit of a weird way, and then you put that together with individual performances not going as well, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in a bit of a hole. And when you haven't gone through that before as a player in terms of understanding how a different club operates and living on the other side of the world, I think you can find yourself just getting completely down on yourself and starting to question yourself on your rugby, and then that sort of all just snowballs. And yeah, I guess for me it was just a snowball effect. I had such high expectations of myself as a footy player. I don't think anybody could hold me to a higher standard than myself. And so when I wasn't playing well, I didn't need anybody to tell me that. But the harder I tried, the worse I got. And then that kind of just, I guess it filtered into my mental state, and that probably took a bit of a dive. And then the first lockdown in March really came at the perfect time for me, because that was probably a time where I probably hated rugby the most, and I was like, oh, I'm sick of this game. You know, I just had enough. And I think what it taught me was that you can't ever put a price on your happiness. And, you know, no matter what, that should always come first. And your mental health and your mental well-being should be a priority. And that was probably something that maybe I didn't, because things had gone really well for me in my career up to this point, you know, I had just taken it for granted and probably didn't have the tools in place that when things weren't going great, I wasn't able to deal with those as well as I would have liked. And I think that's probably the big lesson that I've been able to learn from going to therapy and seeking external help and speaking to our club doctors that, yeah, while it's weird at the start to talk about your feelings or, you know, why you might be upset or why you might be feeling low, I think ultimately going to seek professional help allows you to gain tools to make you help, to help you to get better and to allow yourself to feel these things because they are normal, you know, they are normal to feel down and things like that. It's just that you can't allow yourself to stay down. And I think that's probably where I was, is that I probably just kept feeding myself negative thoughts, and that the harder I tried, the worse it got. So, you know, allowing myself to share these things with professional help really helped me. And in a way, when you share these things with other people and share what's actually going on in your head and you hear yourself say it out loud, you're actually like, fuck, man, that's actually not really that big a deal, is it? You know, and when you share it, you're like, that's not that big in the big scheme of things, to be fair. And yeah, I really enjoyed going to those therapy sessions, and I think they definitely helped me, and I'm in a happy, clear place right now. And, you know, I definitely think there are people out there, especially men, not only rugby players, but men especially, probably, who are sitting in, you know, in this lockdown right now, probably having some of the same thoughts I was thinking and wondering where to head to. And I think the biggest step or the biggest thing you can do is take that first initial step. And after that, you know, momentum starts to build and then eventually you can turn it around. And that's what happened for me. The hardest part was taking the first step. But once I took the first step, it just seemed to just feel natural. And I think it's one of the best things I've been lucky enough to ever put myself through. So,
just on that, Lima, you mentioned it on the Instagram lives. I don't know if you remember that you did with Ugo Monier on the Loose Heads account in the summer. You sort of mentioned that there's a huge stigma around asking for help and talking to a counsellor, and our job as Loose Heads is obviously to break down that stigma. So, just from your side. If there is someone out there who, you know, maybe thinking about talking to someone, but perhaps isn't quite sure how to take that first step, or they're just put off by the idea completely, what would your advice be to those sorts of people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, it was my advice would be to find someone that you feel comfortable with talking to. So in my case, it was our team doctor. And the reason why I probably felt most comfortable with him is because he was completely like a third party. He wasn't like my best friend. He wasn't like my wife. He wasn't like my teammate. He was someone who was completely external from my current inner circle. And that probably is why I was able to share with him, because I wasn't really ashamed or I wasn't scared of what he might think. I think maybe if you're able to find someone like that who's not so close to you in terms of like being in your inner circle, then that might help. Because I found that I don't know, I just couldn't really get the words out to my wife or to my best friends that I was struggling. I just, you know, try to dig myself out, dig deeper and try to put it on my shoulders. But you know, they say a problem shared is a problem halved, and I probably halved that problem when I spoke to our team doctor, Ralph Mitchell. And, you know, after that, I actually felt like a weight off my shoulders. And, you know, I guess if there's someone out there that's thinking about that, you know, I hope you're able to get that weight off your shoulders as well, by just reaching out to somebody. And it's funny because if you are courageous enough to sort of allow yourself to share those things with somebody, not random, but, you know, someone you think you can trust, the give back you get from that person is probably more than you'll ever expect, because they actually are willing to help and willing to steer you in the right direction, or just willing to be there for you. So, you know, I think that's probably what I would say, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's interesting now, Liam. Obviously, Rob says it's all about tackling that stigma, and for anybody in society, that is the stigma is there. But I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Liam, for sportsmen, sportswomen, there seems to be a bigger stigma around it, because you are in the public domain, and if you do an interview talking about it, it will create headlines. And I think maybe for you, correct me if I'm wrong, you come over to Wasps, you are a star player in your own right of what you've been able to achieve over in New Zealand. And then headlines and social media is written about you, and it's negative because of the way you're playing, the way Wasps are playing. So does that demand for excellence just maybe take you a step back, and you want to keep everything bottled up because you don't want to come out and express how you're feeling?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, you pretty much nailed it on the head. I guess, for me, I probably, which was weird, is that I really felt it's a real business over here, in terms of, you know, you come over as a marquee player, and I probably didn't realise what that meant, you know, like as a professional, you know, I think for me, I just thought, oh, yeah, I'm just a player who's coming over here and we're just going to play rugby how I do back home. But actually, like, what they expect of a marquee player is they want marquee results, you know. They want marquee performances, you know. Like, you don't expect to buy a Ferrari and it drive like a Toyota, you know. So I think that's – and that's fair. And, you know, papers and fans and, you know, coaches or whatever all expect that. But it's not as simple as paying somebody a large sum of money and just being like, hey, win us football games. Because what I've worked out is that I don't actually play rugby for money, since going through the last sort of 2 years, is that I actually enjoy being part of a team and playing for something bigger than myself. And that money is just a byproduct of playing really good footy. Yeah, that was something that I had to learn and go through, and it's something that I'm, you know, thankful for now.
Yeah, and just to bring it to loose heads, Lima, obviously a lot of the Wasp guys are involved. Obviously, Cruzy and Brad Shields play a major role, but I know yourself have sported a T-shirt, Jimmy Gopperth, Jack Willis, Wandy Young. So was it important, and maybe even a no-brainer, for you to support loose heads, considering what you've just said there?
I think what I've seen over the years is, you know, too many young guys in this professional space lose their own lives to suicide or by not opening up. And I think what Lucid's does is allow people to do that. And I'm not, you know, not only in rugby circles, you know, we've heard about all the stories of, you know, there's a few boys in France who have taken their lives, and there's a few NRL young boys who have taken their lives, and maybe those could have all been prevented if you know, Loose Heads was around before, or if people were able to share their own stories and allow themselves to be vulnerable and share that, you know, that they were going through some stuff now. And, you know, I guess for me, that's probably why I find it easy to support, is that if I'm going through something like this, then I guarantee there's at least 10 or 15 other dudes in my club right now going through the same thing. And, you know, if you can help one dude, or if someone can read a story about you in a paper and be like, oh, actually, this guy plays rugby, but he's just a human being and he feels the exact same way I do, and it encourages them to step out of their comfort zone, then I think your job is done as someone who's in the spotlight, you know what I mean?
I think slowly Wasps is becoming my team. More and more players supporting Loose Heads. You're a real joy to watch on the pitch. I said this to Cruzy the other day, and he said, "Don't lie, mate. You've always been a Wasps fan." So, but no, it's it's fantastic to see so much support, and even the Wasps media team have been super supportive of the cause as well.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see. You know, it's just awesome to know that there are spaces out there for guys to reach out to, know that there is help, you know, because sometimes I think people don't really know where to look. And if they see somebody, you know, be tagged in a T-shirt or a story, and then they click on it and know that, oh, it's not about a T-shirt. It's about actually helping people's mental health. Then I think, you know, that can only be a good thing. And a few of the boys really get behind it. And, you know, I'm a big advocate for the mental health space. And I think it's something that just needs to be at the forefront for everybody in general.
Do you think seeing the shift in perceptions around mental health kind of helped you get to the point where you felt comfortable opening up to the team doctor? Because we hear stories going back 5-10 years ago of professional players coming out and saying, you know, not feeling my best and being like actually laughed at by the coaches.
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, we live in an age where the information is just all there, and you know, we can't really just have this macho attitude, like this harden up attitude, you know, like just go outside and go for a run, or, you know, like go lift some more weights. Like, that's not going to do anything, you know. Like, if you haven't got the 2 inches between your ears switched in, like, there's no amount of weights or no amount of running will ever be able to help you. I think they work in tandem, you know. You have to have sort of both going at the same time. You can't just have one or the other. I think they really complement each other really well. But yeah, I think right now, I think if you were to say to a coach, look, hey, I'm struggling mentally, could I have a couple of days off? Things at home are hard or whatever. I think these days coaches understand that, you know, a player who is mentally fresh is a dangerous player and someone that will bring something special to the field. But a player who is mentally drained, oh, you might as well just, no matter how good he is, you might as well just keep him in the stands.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Lee, because I think I read either the other week or it might have been a couple of months ago now, Lee Blackett said exactly the same about you. He said, Lima seems to be in a good mental space and that's why he's playing extremely well. So it's very interesting to kind of hear you say that when Lee says it as well. And I know you've talked about kind of addressing your mental health and it's been such a good thing for you, rugby, because you've realised why you play rugby and it's for fun. And I guess that was the mantra and the ethos that you had when you first started playing at school as well.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I got to, you know, thank sort of Lee and the new coaching regime for the way they've been able to sort of transform the club and allow us to be who we want to be and treat everyone as individuals, because I think that's something that's really important, is that not every individual is the same in a rugby team. And some guys do it for different reasons and some guys are motivated by different things. And I think they've sort of found the perfect way to motivate me. And I think that's really helped my game and really helped me grow over here. And I think that's probably why I'm in the space I'm in right now, is because they've allowed me to be who I want to be and not someone I'm not.
And in terms of motivation as well, Lima, when you were at school, I love the quote from an interview that you did, I think, a year or so ago, and it said, the only reason why I went to school was to play rugby and have lunch.
Yeah, that is true. I even went back to school. So I even went back to school after finishing because I loved rugby so much. So I repeated my final year just because I wanted to play rugby even more and go back and eat lunch. So, yeah, I guess I've always loved the game and been lucky enough to be around it a lot as a kid. It is something that I really enjoyed.
And sport in schools is obviously massive at the moment, and you probably would have seen that since you moved over as well to the UK, Liam, that, you know, sport is such a massive part of kids' lives. And one thing that we wanted to get you on, really, and I've seen you've been quite sort of vocal about it on Twitter and Instagram, is kind of what Marcus Rashford's doing at the moment in terms of the free school meals and having, you know, that lunch and that meal's there to go on and have a good day at school and go on to play and be active in sport as well. I mean, how important do you think the work Marcus Rashford is doing at the moment for for kids in society.
For what a boy that guy is, eh? Like, mate, just knight the guy already, I reckon. Far out, get him on his knee and knight the guy. You know, I read somewhere, if I read someone tweet, I think they were saying, if I was the Labour Party, I would look to be signing Marcus Rashford in the transfer window. I thought that was quite funny, but yeah, I think what he's doing is pretty special. You know, obviously he's someone who's come from nothing, and you know, there's so many stories about where he's come from, and it doesn't take much to look up, you know, his background and stuff. And I think it's pretty special. And, you know, that's someone who's been able to use this platform for positivity and to help those less fortunate. And I just think he's unbelievable. You know, for, what is he, 22, 23? You know, he's getting paid millions of pounds, you know, every year. He could be doing all sorts of things. But what he wants to do is give back to those who he knows are going without. And, you know, that's something pretty special, obviously. You know, I don't know. It shouldn't really take a football player to use his thumbs and tweet out a storm to get people to want to feed kids. But, you know, I guess that's the age we're living in. And it's, yeah, he's truly someone pretty special in this country right now. And I think in the future, there are going to be a lot of kids who have benefited from what he's done. And I think those kids will go on and, you know, probably do the same thing for those coming behind them and pass that forward. So I think it's pretty awesome.
Hi, guys. I'm Sam James. I'm a Looseheads ambassador. And you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
And I guess as well, Lima, in terms of kind of rugby community, over back home in New Zealand, it is obviously the main sport, and you just see the amount of fans that flock to the internationals that you watch and sort of the super rugby games you were involved with. And if you don't mind just maybe touching on your time playing in New Zealand, and I guess 2015 is a year, which seems such a long time ago now, but sticks in your mind with fondness, having guided the Highlanders to a Super Rugby title?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I love my time in Dunedin. I think the first couple of years down there, I probably didn't really get it right as a professional. You know, I was sort of 18 years old, moved down to a student city, and, you know, wasn't really picked to play, but I was doing more work off the field than I was on it. You know what I mean? There was that student life. My friends were down there. They were taking me to parties, and I was the one with the money, so I was providing the beer. So it was, I kind of look back at that time and think, oh man, if I had my time again, I would probably do a few things a little bit differently. And I look back at the start of my career down there with getting so many injuries and things like that. There probably was a reason around that. And, you know, I was too busy out drinking and having a good time rather than worrying about my rehab and focusing on being a proper professional. But I guess that's come with time and come with age and something that I've learned along the way. But yeah, my first sort of 5 years leading up to that moment in 2015 was pretty hard. I remember being injured in 2011, 2012. I had a great preseason, and I was the fittest and fastest I've probably been. And then I did my shoulder. And then in 2013, we had like a rock star team and we were terrible. And I remember Jamie Joe ripping me off the field in the 37th minute. So, you know, the guy didn't even wait 3 minutes to sub me off at halftime. He knew I was playing that bad that he said, nah, he's had enough, throwing the towel, he's getting subbed off. And that was one of the worst parts of my, you know, Highlanders career. And then in 2014, we were able to sign Tony Brown and we ended up making the playoffs for the first time. And a year later, we ended up winning the thing. So, you know, I think I would go through all that heartache and pain, you know, 5 years of struggle to win a title again. And yeah, it was a pretty special place. I think the thing I loved the most about Dunedin was, you know, you get to play indoors. You know, like, who plays rugby indoors, like, week in, week out? Like, you just know that it's going to be running rugby. Most teams come down there, even if they're not into running rugby, they're coming down there to throw the ball around, and you know, the fans are in for a good spectacle. So that's probably something that I really, really enjoyed about my time down there, was playing indoors, and just the noise in there was pretty special. And just having the students there in the zoo, they're pretty crazy. You know, half the time they don't even remember the score, and they've got DJs blasting up music during the game and KFC at halftime. So, you know, it doesn't get much better than that, especially with packed out zoo. So, yeah, it was an awesome time in my life. I'm pretty happy to have been a part of that that team and that culture down there.
Four tries means fries, isn't it, with KFC?
Yeah. Something like that. Too bad I never scored for it. Bloody hell. Too busy setting up Waisaki and Ben Smith.
And of course, obviously, Lulu, your performances in that 2015 season continue to get recognition for the All Blacks, and you made your debut in right and saying against South Africa in Johannesburg, and you helped New Zealand beat the Springboks that day. Rob mentioned something yesterday when we were planning as well, that you would have seen obviously all the All or Nothing documentaries, which Amazon do. There's Manchester City, Tottenham Hotspurs, obviously you guys with the All Blacks as well, and you talk about kind of what it meant for you, and but obviously to represent your country, but also your family as well. So just tell us a little bit about your debut and how special that was for you and your family.
Yeah, it was, you know, probably one thing I probably regret is not being able to get my parents over. I think I was just in such a, like a, when I got the call, no, when he had told me on the Monday night that I was going to start on the Saturday, like, they just came out of left field for me. I was just like, what the fuck? Like, are you crazy? Like, we're playing South Africa in Johannesburg at altitude, and I've never, ever played a test before, and you're going to start me in the number 10 jersey. Like, I was just gobsmacked after we came out of a meeting with Ian Foster. I just remember looking at him, like, just in a daze, thinking, you're fucking crazy. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I was like, I can't believe this. Like, yeah. And so I was just like in complete shock. And I remember walking back to my room and like just being in a weird state where I was just like thinking to myself, nah, maybe he's like didn't say what he said. Maybe I was just hearing it. Yeah. I was just like, you know, because you're in South Africa, you know, like I've never played a test before. I think, okay, I'm a 10. Like that's kind of like a pivotal position. We're playing South Africa in South Africa at altitude. I'm just thinking, this is, you know, like, oh, maybe I'll get like 5 minutes off the bench. You know, I'll be happy with that. And he goes, oh, no, you get to start. And so I think one of the things that I probably regret is just being so worried about the performance that I never got my parents to fly over to watch that. But, you know, for me, it was just an accumulation of so much hard work, and not just for myself, but a lot of people to get me there, like my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters, and, you know, just so many friends and family who had helped me along the way. So when I got to actually put the jersey on, that's what I thought about when I was walking down the tunnel, is that it wasn't just me who had got there. You know, yeah, I might have had to, you know, get up early in the morning and do the runs, but I always had people behind me sort of pushing me or guiding me or helping me along this sort of journey to get me to this position. And I remember walking down the tunnel just thinking of all those people who had you know, either given their time or, you know, bought a raffle off me because I was fundraising to go on a rugby trip, or I just knew when I walked out and heard the anthem and did the haka that this was the place for me. And it was kind of a weird one because I wasn't actually that nervous. And I say that because I think I had dreamt about it so many times as a kid, and I'd seen it so many times in my head. And so many times I'd lay awake at night just thinking about, you know, potentially coming in All Black. You know, you have these silly dreams because you don't actually think they're going to come true. But because I reckon I would have thought about it every single day of my life when I was 5 years old about being an All Black. And so when it came to it, I had already seen it in my mind. And so it didn't really faze me. I was just more excited by the opportunity. And then my mentality was going into the game was that if this is the first and only chance you'll ever get to be an All Black, you might as well do it how you want to do it. And so I just knew that I wasn't gonna be scared. I wasn't gonna be intimidated. I was just gonna go out there and, you know, swing for the fence and, you know, hope I had a home run. And it was something that I really enjoyed. And now reflecting upon it, it's probably something that I miss as being a part of a national setup because it is pretty cool.
Is that something you're aspiring to, Liam? Do you think you've still got a future to pull on the famous jersey again?
I'm not too sure. I think maybe things have. You can never say never, but if I was to go home and, you know, play really well and force myself in, you know, I think I would definitely cherish it more now because I think I realize how cool and how special it is. I think at the time, because you're trying to achieve so many things and, you know, you're always trying to chase your goals. And when you get to one goal, you just want to get to another. I think maybe sometimes I would have liked to have just stopped and smelled the roses and enjoyed the moment. You know, you're in such a high performance environment, especially one like the All Blacks. You know, you win a game and it's almost relief rather than satisfaction that you've won because there's so much pressure on you to win. So sometimes you win a tough test and you're like, okay, got to do my ice bath, got to drink my fucking protein shake, got to go to sleep at, you know, 8 p.m., wake up and, you know, all these things. Yeah. And you're not actually enjoying it. I think now if I was to get back into that environment, I think I'd be much more relaxed and I would just enjoy it for what it is. And really, it's just a game with a different colour shirt on your back.
Yeah, because we're going to touch on the environment, Liam, because you're stepping into a squad there, I think, 2 years after they won the World Cup. And they're obviously going again to win the World Cup in 2019 as well. So I guess the environment, you're stepping in there and all of a sudden it's 100% every single time because you're, at the end of the day, you're playing for the World Champions.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think that something I've been able to learn over here is that, like, you know, rugby around the world isn't actually that big, but because you're in a bubble in New Zealand, it's the be-all and end-all, you know what I mean? But sort of being able to come over here and realise, like, rugby is, you know, big to, you know, a certain part of society, but it's not actually, it doesn't really matter in the big scheme of things over here. And you can kind of allow yourself to just be who you want to be and, you know, enjoy the world around you. Whereas I think if you're consumed by, sometimes you can get consumed by the All Black jersey and how big it actually is. And maybe at times in my career there, that was probably what happened to me is you have this big beast that is the All Blacks, but you're so caught up in it that you don't actually realize how lucky and how special it is to be a part of. And you just want to do your best every single day, but you don't actually stand there and think, wow, that's pretty cool. But, you know, obviously with hindsight and being over here and looking at it, I think it's something that I would do differently if I was ever to get that opportunity again.
Yeah, and one thing I just want to go back to, Liam, is the sort of, when you were saying you were stood in the tunnel and you're walking out in Johannesburg and you were thinking of all the people that helped you on your way, and obviously your family comes to your mind first and foremost. And I know you were part of Dan Leo's film, if that's right, Oceans Apart, and you talk about your family, and it seemed to have resonated a lot across the rugby community, what Dan put together. I mean, how special was it for you to kind of play a part in what Dan was doing and sort of tell your story as well?
Yeah, it was. And I, you know, I commend Dan Leo for, you know, he's put his head above the pulpit and he's, you know, kind of taken it upon himself and tried to get rugby to change. And, you know, as rugby, we look at ourselves as sort of this game that is made for everybody. But if you pull it all back, at the moment, it really isn't. You know, it's only the elites that it's really made for. And the Tier 1 nations. And what he's done is he shined a light on some pretty big issues that I think need to be sorted out by World Rugby in order for the game to grow. And I think what the Pacific Islands gives to this game, you know, is out of this world. You know, some of the greatest players have been of Pacific Island descent, and I think it's an absolute disgrace that that these unions and these countries are still where they are now. And we're in 2021, you know, it's hard to sit there and watch and the disparity between unions and what goes on. But, you know, I hope in my lifetime I'm able to see change and I'm able to see things turn for the better, because I think these small nations add so much to world rugby. And yeah, I think it's an injustice that things are the way they are right now. But hopefully with what Dan's doing and, you know, voices around the world, I think, and I'm hopeful that things will be better in the future.
I went to Fiji a few years ago. I was only there for 5 days. Funny story, actually. I turned up staying in a hostel and the room wasn't ready, obviously, because they all live on what they call Fiji time, where everything and everyone is late. I waited around by the beach and with a beer, and there was a few rugby balls flying around, and they called me to say my room was ready. And there was a big, massive guy who came and carried my bag to my room, and he said, "Do you like rugby? Do you play rugby? We're playing rugby tonight. Do you fancy it?" So I loved that. Like, rugby over there and in the Pacific Islands, it's like a religion, and it's so important to give back and give back to these rugby-loving nations that have given us so much. And for me, and I know it's the same for Mark and Dave, and probably you as well, Chris, but, you know, we're so keen to support Dan, Leo, and on that sort of journey, and do whatever we can as well.
Oh, man, I'm sure he really appreciates that. I think it's awesome to hear, you know, voices that aren't necessarily from the Pacific Islands as well. I think it gives it so much more power when you get outside influences who have nothing to do with the Pacific Islands, put their voice and put their effort and time or whatever behind these causes, because I think it just adds so much, and it really does help, I think, and helps the cause, because I think it's something that really does need addressing. And yeah, I just think it's awesome. So thank you.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reed and I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, Rob, interesting you say that you played a game in Fiji. Were you operating at fullback that day?
Yeah, I knew that fullback chat was going to come at some point.
And I think one man who's started to really flourish there is you, Lima. This season, I think you've played every single game in the 15 shirt, and it seems like you're playing some very, very good rugby at the moment. 50 appearances wrapped up at the start of the new year. It seems like you're enjoying yourself right in the backfield.
Yeah, it's good fun, eh? But fuck, a lot of unrewarded running. Like, you have to run to places where, like, you have to be, but you know, like, just in case, but you don't ever, like, get used back there. So you're kind of like covering just for the sake of it if they decide to kick the ball there. And on the off chance that you're lazy and you don't get back there, then that's when they're bloody going to kick it there, or they're going to, you know, run there. There was I think it was Bath's first try, I think Priestland, and it came up in the review, and I got up from the ruck because I think Jack Willis carried, and I don't know what the hell I was doing in the breakdown. Like, fuck me, I'm not doing much in there. But anyways, I get up from the breakdown and I'm like, I'm just ball watching. And in the review, Lee's just like, "Lima, what are you doing? What are you doing?" Like, he's like, "You're supposed to be over here. Like, you might not have stopped the try, but at least be there." And I'm just like thinking, "Oh yeah, fuck. You're probably right. You know, like, you're probably right. Yeah. Sorry, coach, my bad." But it's really been pretty fun to be back there, and I've relished the opportunity to have a lot more freedom. And I was lucky enough to play with Ben Smith, who gave me so much from the back, and that I think that has allowed me to give a lot to whoever's playing at 10, whether it's Charlie or whether it's Jacob. And I've understood what a world class fullback can do for you as a fly half. Not that I'm world class, but the lesson I learned from Ben is, you know, your chat and your eyes and your communication, is it's got to be second to none, and it's got to be quick, and it's just got to be accurate, and it's going to be direct, and it's got to be just straight to the point. And that's something that really helped my game, was I had him at the back just sort of marshalling me around. And while I was getting all the praise for making our team look good, as he was at the back sort of pulling the strings and, you know, telling me that Waisaki was open, so crossfield kick it, you know, things like that. And all I had to do was either crossfield kick or not crossfield kick. And that makes your job pretty easy as a 10 if all you have to do is listen and then decide. You know, like I might be giving chat to Jacob and saying that it's on to go, you know, right corner, but he's like, nah, I think we'll I'll pass it out the back to me instead. And that's all you can do, is just keep relaying information, and then it's on the guy who's getting that information to decide what to do with it. And I think that's really helped being in that position of being 10 is, and having Ben Smith there has allowed me to kind of transition to fullback a lot easier, because I understand what the guy wearing the 10 shirt requires.
And can you vouch for that, Rob, all that running at fullback?
Yeah, weirdly, I quite like that part of the game. I love when like the back three works as a pendulum and you're sort of in charge of that, and you're pushing one wing forward and you're pulling one back. And yeah, I love that part of the game sort of defensively. But then I think Lima probably makes more line breaks than me, so that's where a lot more of running in that sense. But as well as that, you've sort of, if you know you were to now go back to 10, you've also got a different perspective on the game, so you know where the spaces could be. So having played fullback.
Yeah. So yeah, because I was a 10 and sort of nowhere, you know, if a fullback's positioned in a good space, you're probably not going to kick it to that space. But I kind of understand, if I can just show that I'm pretending to be somewhere, and then I can, you know, piss off and run to actually where I want to be, that all kind of just helps. You know, you kind of have to play with pictures in the backfield. You know, I might show that I'm flat in the line, going to come up, but then I'll let the line go and then I'll hold back. And so the guy's like, oh, he's still there. You know what I mean? So it's just little things like that that's really helped me play around with the backfield and learn and have some fun.
I guess as well, Liam, probably just to flip it on its head a little bit, that now you are in that backfield, you can maybe mentor Jacob a little bit, maybe mentor Charlie Atkinson a bit, because I know obviously you came to Wasp and it was all about probably nailing down that number 10 role, but you can use your experiences for whatever you say, you are a world-class player, and that should rub off on Jacob and Charlie.
Yeah, for sure, and that's something that I've really prided myself on, sort of coming through, is that if there's any young guys who are younger than me, that I've always been open to share the wealth of knowledge I've been able to pick up over the years, because I've been lucky enough to have that same knowledge, you know, passed on to me. Guys like, you know, Pity Wee Poo, Dan Carter, Aaron Cruden, you know, Colin Slade, just older guys who just helped me along the way, and always, you know, if there was a question I wanted to ask or there was something I wasn't really doing as well, they would sort of always tell me. And I think, you know, like while we are all competing for the same position, you don't have to keep information from each other. You can make each other better, and that just makes the team better. Because at the end of the day, that is a team sport, and you know, I am here to win championships. And to be fair, you know, that's what you want to do, is you want to win championships. And the only way you do that is if all your players are trying to better each other and trying to help each other along the way, and sort of head in the same direction, because, you know, if one wins, we all win.
And we talk about experience there, Liam, and a player in the Wasp ranks who has buckets of experience is, of course, Jimmy Gopperth. And I know you've built up quite a good relationship with him, some good Instagrams and Twitter conversations between you both. I mean, how much of an influence has he been on the Wasp team, but also when you were a player and getting you sort of that sense of belonging in the Wasp team?
Yeah, it's funny because I used to pay to go watch Jimmy Gopperth play back in when he was playing with the Hurricanes, with his freaking little blonde streaks through his hair and fucking hell, and his little rugby gloves, you know, his rugby gloves as well. So it's funny how life works out, you know. But yeah, he's awesome. I think no one loves the game as much as Jimmy Gopoff, and I say that, you know, that's no dig at him. You know, he's someone who genuinely like loves rugby, and he's just so pumped up about it. And you know, I don't think you play to sort of 37, 38 if you don't love the game. And he is someone who's passionate about it, and he sees the game quite easy, and what he's able to bring to the club is just a really balanced old head. You know, we call it old, but you know, that's just experience. And I just think he just adds so much value to a team, and it wouldn't surprise me if he bloody played till 40, you know, the way he's going. But you won't catch me playing to his age, I tell you that much for free. Bloody hell.
Well, you said you've got plenty left in the tank, Lena.
Yeah, not in these English winters, man.
And a brainwave there, guys. I know we did the Brad Shields thing last year. Could we get Jimmy Gopoff maybe to put blonde highlights in his hair?
Yeah, consider it done.
Consider it done. I reckon Lena could maybe sat up, see if Jimmy can get blonde highlights again, Lena.
Yeah, I reckon.
And I think Wasps fans won't forgive me, Lena, if we didn't ask about two of the rising stars that you've got in your team at the moment with Jack Willis and Alfie Barbary. These two kids just seem to play with absolutely no fear, and they seem to be such key parts of your team at the moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll touch on Jack Willis first. I think he used to do like ballet or some shit, because the positions he gets in like is unbelievable. Like the way he does like the splits and stuff, I'm just like, bro, that can't be good for the groin, you know? Like every time I look at him over the ball, I'm just like, my groin feels like it's ripping off the bone. And I'm just like, oh, not for me. But you know, he's a tough kid. And he, you know, right, he deserves a spot in England, and it wouldn't surprise me if he was on the British and Irish Lions tour this year. I think he's that good. I think he's, I think he's a phenomenal player. But Alfie Barbary, it's quite funny you mentioned him, because 2 years ago, one of the coaches said to me when I first arrived, I said, but who's that big kid? He was like walking through the canteen, and he's like, oh, that's Alfie Barbary. I was like, oh, yeah, what, does he play like number 8 or something? He's like, nah, he's a hooker. I was like, jeez. And he said to me that's the best rugby player he's ever seen. And I was at that age, and I was like, oh, that's a big call, you know, 17 years old. I was just like, geez. And then I was just like, and then 2 years later, you know, he's obviously playing, you know, for the first team. And I'm just like, yeah, that coach was right. You know, he's probably the best seven, you know, at the time, the only other 17-year-old I'd seen who someone also said the same thing was Adi Savia. So when he said that 2 years ago, I was like, far, that's a pretty big statement to make. And then I compared it to now. I was like, yeah, actually, I put those two guys in the same boat, you know. Like, so I think he's got a massive future, whether it's at 6 or hooker or centre, as he likes to call himself. He reckons he's good enough to be a centre. But I said, mate, your brain's too slow to be at centre. Your body might work, but your brain's not going to work out there. It's not as easy as just running over people out there, Alfie. And he just laughed. But he's a good young kid. He's obviously had a bit of bad luck at the moment with injury, but I'm sure, you know, that England shirt will be on his back in the next sort of year or so, I'd say.
I reckon Cruzy fancies himself as a centre at the moment as well.
Yeah, every time we get a turnover, I hope it doesn't go to Cruzy, because he's going to use that left peg and put it in the corners. I'm just like, for fuck's sakes, give it out the back. I'm steaming him from fullback. Yeah, but I know he's going to put it on his left peg, so I'm like, fucking hell.
What about the celebration as well?
Yeah, I didn't actually notice that until, you know, someone was bagging him on Twitter, and I thought it was a bit of a laugh. But he's paying homage to his Rotherham brothers, I think, or something like that. That's what he says anyway. I'm just like, bro, some teams might think you're actually pissing on their number one pitch and start getting pissed off. So, but you know, I think it's good. The game needs stuff like that these days, especially in these times.
And I think the game needs performances like what's supporting him at the moment, Liam. And I just want to sort of get your thoughts going into the second half of the season, really. You guys find yourselves in a great position. Obviously, we've got this break now for 2 weeks. But I guess the target is to go one better than last year, because we did so well in the second half of last season to get to the final and just came up short against Exeter. It just sounds like Wasps are in a good place to challenge for honours again this year.
Yeah, we were an inch away from taking that. You know, if I look back, we should have won that game, but, you know, we didn't, and that's okay. But I think anything, you know, if we're not aspiring to win Europe and win the Prem, then, you know, I don't think this club has lofty enough goals. But it's something that we definitely are striving for, and something that I personally want to do is I want to win Europe and I want to win the Prem. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that have to go right for those things to happen, but I believe we've got the group, we've got the talent, we've got the coaches, there's everything in our hands that we can control to get there to do it. You know, we can't control injuries or you know, referee decisions or things like that. But, you know, if we continue to keep challenging ourselves at work every week and have fun and, you know, get a bit lucky on the injury front and things like that, I think we can definitely push for those places. And, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I know one of the goals I had for this year was win the Prem and win Europe. And, you know, I'm pretty sure most of the boys would be echoing those same thoughts.
G'day guys, it's Brad Shields here. I'm a Looseheads ambassador. You're listening to a Looseheads podcast. Mental health is just as important as physical health.
Well, I'm sure the brand of rugby that Wasps are playing would go down well on Mars if they were to play that style of rugby as well. And I think it's time now for your Mars 15. You mentioned before we pressed record, the list was prepared. You've had the pen in your hand. So Mark, over to you once again for this part.
So with no further ado, this is the concept of the Mars 15, that the Martians have landed. They've no idea that the Earth has got coronavirus at the moment, but they quite fancy the tall mountains and the flowing rivers and the seas and the oceans and the South Island of New Zealand. And they have challenged Earth to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. Sadly, we've lost the toss. So on Saturday, we leave for a four-week shuttle to get to Mars to play one game to decide the future of civilization. So Lima Sopawanga, All Black, coolest man on the pitch. This is your opportunity to pick 1 to 15.
Okay, so I'll pick my 1 to 15. I've got a coach, a manager, a water boy, and a kit man. So we'll go off number one. We'll start at the first one. I've gone Joe Marler. You know, he can get under your skin as a opponent. He's, you know, he's very, I think he'll be very good for after match functions and extracurricular activities. So I've gone Joe Marler at number one. I just think he just brings something to the game, something that's good about the game at number one. At number two, I've gone Dane Coles. Dane Coles, you need some niggle. You need the niggle in there if we're going to win this. So I've gone Dane Coles to line up next to Marler at three. This one was a bit of a weird one, but I love it. Any guy who wants to sack off rugby to party with Zlatan, the great one, I think deserves to be in my 15. So I've gone Martin Gastro Giovanni. I think he'll be awesome for after the win when we go back home on the spaceship. He's been my number three. Locks, we need some scary buggers, and one of the scariest I think who's ever played a lock is Bucky Sporter. So I've gone with him at number four. I was lucky enough to play the bar bars with him, and well, he can drink some beers, I tell you that much. So he'll be good on the field and off the field. Five, I've gone Martin Johnson. He just looks scary, you know. He looks like ugly, and he just looks scary. So I've gone Martin Johnson at five. I think he'll lead the way really nicely. Jerry Collins at number six. Rest in peace, Jerry Collins. I've gone him. Someone who hurts hard. but there's a few tales of him, you know, smoking darts in the hotel rooms and things like that, and young players having to go and get his cigarettes. So I think he'll be good. He'll be a great tourist as well. Number seven, I've picked this guy, Richie McCaw. I've picked him because he flies helicopters. So if the record is going to shit and we lose our pilot for whatever reason, I think he might be able to fly us to Mars and back, just in case. Number eight, I've gone a Frenchman. Everybody needs a crazy Frenchman. And I've gone, if your nickname's the Caveman, I think you should deserve to go to Mars and play for our freedom, as Sebastian Chabal. He just looks scary. And I watched his highlights of him tackling dudes. So
that is one scary pack, actually.
Yeah. We're going, like, this is for to save planet Earth. You need the scariest looking dudes out, you know? So I think, I think it just has to be done. I've gone George Gregan at number nine. Yappy number nine. You know, the 4 more years comment just did it for me when I was a kid watching it. That really broke my heart, that, when I heard that. So, he's a winner. Number 10, I can't go past the GOAT, in my opinion, DC. He's just Mr. Cool. He's sponsored by Louis Vuitton and all this kind of cool stuff. So I'm sure that he will have the parties lined up on the way back down for the boys after the win. Number 11, can't go past it. He's iconic. Jonah, we're going to need everything we can get to get over the line. So Jonah Lomu at 11. Number 12, someone who's also scary through the midfield, have gone Ma'anonu. He's pretty special character. So I've got Ma'a at 12. 13, you need someone who's going to hit hard and who's got no fear. So I've gone Brian Lima at 13, the chiropractor.
Chiropractor, yeah.
He's super feedbacks for us. At 14, I've gone Rupini Thauthau Mbuka, electric, someone special. I was lucky enough to watch him in Super Rugby, and man, no one could score a try like him. And at 15, the Pycockadeeky Express, Christian Cullen.
Before you give slate your backroom staff, Lima, just out of that collection of alarmingly, well, the pack just set the seal, but there's some scary backs as well there. Brian Lima. Who's captain?
That's an interesting one. I think I would have to go. I think I'm going to put George Gregan as my captain. He's my captain. Someone who's a link. He's a link between the forwards and the backs. I think he's people will have a lot of respect for him. I think he competes well. Yeah, George Gregan would be my captain amongst all those scary dudes.
And the backroom staff.
The coach, I've gone The Rock. The Rock's my coach. You just might need The Rock up there just in case, you know. Someone gets injured or we lose a player heading up to Mars, you can chuck him anywhere from 1 to 15, I reckon. He just fits in anywhere. Manager, I had to put this guy in. I thought about putting him in the team, but just didn't quite bring enough fear for me. But he brings a whole lot of other things that I think really add to a team environment, and that's James Haskell as the manager.
Fair play.
You know, good chat. I think he'll have, you know, good socials for the boys. He'll have it all organised. He'll bring life to the party. Waterboy was a bit weird, but I thought, you know, there's a lot of old dudes in here for this trip, so I'm going to bring Tupac along. Tupac's going to be my water boy. You need a few little beats, I reckon. So he's going to be my water boy. Tupac's going to be my water boy. And the kit man, if all else fails up there, we're going to have Iron Man. Iron Man will be there too, just in case. He's like our safety net.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
I love the way, Lima, there you've picked Dan Carr and Richie McCaw, two of the probably the best players to ever walk this earth, and you've not really talked about the rugby abilities. It's McCaw's flying ability with a helicopter and Dan Carr to bring in the party. It's fantastic. That's what Mars 15s are all about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you've got to be well balanced to get in my team, and I think, you know, you can't just be rugby. You have to be able to do a little bit more. But you also got to be good at rugby, so.
Yeah, it's a really, really good team, that Lima. I think a few of your Wasps teammates who might listen to this will be disappointed they've not made the cut.
Mate, this is for the saviour of the world right now. You know, these guys can probably save us right now from coronavirus, I think.
I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right, Lima. Well, Lima, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you on the Loose Heads podcast this afternoon. Thank you for obviously talking to us about your career, but also going into sort of the interview you did with the Telegraph and all the stuff around mental health. It's massively important, more so than ever during this time. So we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us on the podcast today, Lima.
No worries, lads. Anytime, man. Anytime. So thanks for having me on, and thanks for all that you guys do. I know it's really appreciated amongst the boys, and yeah, just want to say thank you as well. So cheers, boys. Thanks for having me on.
And as always, massive thank you to Mark, Dave and Rob.
Cheers.
Good stuff. Do check out Loose Heads' socials and the website as well at the moment. All the links will be in the description of the podcast. The guys are doing great work and continue to do so, so do check them out. But that has been another episode of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks so much for listening.
You're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads podcast.